and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, we will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about America's 31st president, Herbert Hoover. But first, after several threatening military exercises from China, Taiwan launched its own military exercises Wednesday. The move was an attempt by the self-governing island to show its ability to resist Chinese pressure. The Wednesday exercises were off the eastern area of Hualien. They follow days of Chinese military firings and advances into Taiwan's sea and airspace by ships and planes from the People's Liberation Army. That is the military arm of China's ruling Communist Party. Taiwan's Defense Ministry spokesperson, Sun Li Fong, condemned Chinese military activities as hurting peace in the area. Sun added that Communist China's military operations just provide us with the opportunity for combat readiness training. Taiwan's Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Joanne Wu, said China was using recent visits by U.S. Congress members, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, as a justification for its military threats. She said China is trying to scare Taiwan into accepting what it calls terms for peaceful reunification. But it interferes with shipping and commercial activities in the Indo-Pacific region. China sees the island as part of its territory to be taken over by force if necessary. It considers visits to Taiwan by foreign officials as recognizing its independence. Alongside its military threats, China imposed visa bans and other sanctions Tuesday on Taiwanese politicians. China has no legal power over Taiwan, and it is unclear what effect the sanctions would have. China has refused all contact with Taiwan's government since shortly after the 2016 election of President Tsai Ing-wen of the pro-independence Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. Tsai was re-elected in 2020. The DPP also controls the legislature. A large majority of Taiwanese favor keeping Taiwan's current structure of self-governance with strong economic and social connections with China. China accuses the U.S. of supporting the island's independence through the sale of weapons and meetings with U.S. politicians and the island's government. The U.S. says it does not support independence and has no formal diplomatic ties with the island, but it is legally required to help defend Taiwan against threats from China. Aside from warning its military, Taiwan has largely played down the threat from the Chinese exercises. Life has continued as normal among its population of 23 million. Taiwan has lived with China's vocal and military threats for more than 70 years.
The American states of Arizona and Nevada will again face cuts in the amount of water they can draw from the Colorado River. Federal officials announced the cuts this week as the western states are experiencing extremely dry weather conditions. The cuts, planned for next year, will force states to decide where and how to reduce water usage. The decision will put more pressure on the states with a growing population in a hotter, drier future. We are taking steps to protect the 40 million people who depend on the Colorado River for their lives and livelihoods, said Camille Tutin. She leads the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which oversees water policy for the river. The Colorado River provides water across 7 American states and Mexico. Its water helps support an agricultural industry valued at $15 billion a year. The federal estimates of the water levels will also determine how much states and cities can draw for their water supply. In addition to those cuts, the Bureau of Reclamation said Tuesday that states had missed a deadline to propose at least 15% more cuts needed to keep the water levels at the lakes or reservoirs from dropping even more. For example, officials have predicted that water levels at Lake Mead, the nation's largest reservoir, will drop severely. The lake is currently less than a quarter full. The states collectively have not identified and adopted specific actions of sufficient magnitude that would stabilize the system, Tutin said. In Arizona, the state placed all its water reduction last year on the agricultural industry. Now, officials will have to decide whether to spread additional pain to growing cities that depend on the river. The cuts are not expected to have a considerable effect on Nevada. It already has one of the strongest water conservation policies in the West. The cut is planned for next year only. But University of Oxford researcher Kevin Wheeler said the science shows it will likely remain for much longer. It's pretty clear that these reductions just have to stay in place until the drought has ended, or we realize they actually have to get worse and the cuts have to get deeper. The cuts are based on a plan the 7 states and Mexico signed in 2019 to help maintain reservoir levels. Under that plan, the amount of water set aside for states depends on the water levels at Lake Mead. Last year, the lake fell low enough for the U.S. government to declare a first-ever water shortage in the area. The declaration forced required cuts for Arizona and Nevada, as well as Mexico, in 2022. Officials expect the falling lake levels to bring additional cuts to Nevada, Arizona, and Mexico next year. Other states with higher claims to water rights are not expected to see cuts. Reservoir levels have been falling for years, and faster than experts predicted, after 22 years of dry weather. Climate change and overuse of the river have worsened the situation. Hot temperatures and less snow have reduced the amount of water flowing from the Rocky Mountains, where the river starts to wind its way 2,334 kilometers into the Gulf of Mexico. Already, officials have held back millions of cubic meters of water in Lake Powell. It is the other large Colorado River reservoir sitting upstream from Lake Mead along the Arizona-Utah border. Water from the lake runs through Glen Canyon Dam, which produces enough electricity to power between 1 million and 1.5 million homes each year. As water levels at Lake Powell reached levels low enough to threaten water-based power production, federal officials said they would hold back an additional 592 million cubic meters of water to ensure the dam could still produce energy. That water would normally flow to Lake Mead. Under the new reductions, Arizona will lose slightly more water than it did this year, when 18% of its supply was cut. In 2023, it will lose an additional 3%. Nevada will lose about 8% of its supply. Last year, Nevada lost 7%. I'm Katie Weaver.
Research suggests that nearly half of American teenagers say they use the Internet almost constantly. The United States-based Pew Research Center released a study this month. It found that the share of teens who say they are online almost all the time rose from 24% in 2015 to 46%. The results were based on a Pew public opinion study carried out from April 14th to May 4th. The study involved 1,316 teens aged 13 to 17 years old. The research found that about 95% of American teens have smartphones. The study also asked teens about their social media behavior. It found that the number of teens using Facebook has dropped to 32%, down from 71% in 2015. The research shows that teens have moved away from Facebook to spend time on the video sharing services YouTube and TikTok. About 95% of teens said they use Google-owned YouTube, while 67% said they use TikTok. About 62% of the teens said they use Instagram, which is owned by Facebook's parent company, Meta. About 59% said they use Snapchat. Less than one-fourth of teens said they use Twitter. A quarter of teens who use Snapchat or TikTok say they use these apps almost constantly, and a fifth of teen YouTube users say the same, the study said. The research found that teen boys are more likely than teen girls to use YouTube or the services Twitch and Reddit. Teen girls were more interested in using TikTok, Instagram, and Snapchat. In addition, higher shares of Black and Hispanic teens reported using TikTok, Twitter, and WhatsApp compared to white teens. About 54% of teens questioned said it would be somewhat hard to give up social media while 46% said it would be somewhat easy. About 25% of teen boys said giving up social media would be very easy. But just 15% of teen girls said the same. Experts in online technology behavior have accused large technology companies of targeting teens with methods to get them to spend more time on their social media services. One method uses algorithms to repeatedly suggest content to keep users on the services for longer periods of time. Child rights groups and U.S. Congress members have warned that heavy use of social media services can harm the mental health of young users. They have called on large technology companies to take steps to reduce such harm. Several services, including Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok, have introduced features that they say are designed to make their services safer and more fitting for young users. The tools do offer some help, such as blocking unknown individuals from messaging children. But experts say the measures also come with weaknesses. For example, teens can get around limits if they lie about their age. The services also largely depend on parents to enforce rules. And the measures do little or nothing to limit inappropriate and harmful material suggested by algorithms. These platforms know that their algorithms can sometimes be amplifying harmful content, and they're not taking steps to stop that, said Irene Lai. She is a privacy advisor at the nonprofit group Common Sense Media, based in San Francisco, California. Lai said the more teens keep scrolling, the more involved they get in the services. She added that the longer teens spend on the services, the more profitable the technology companies become. I don't think they have too much incentive to be changing that, Lai said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Herbert Hoover. He took office in 1929. Hoover was president for the early years of what Americans call the Great Depression. During those years, the United States economy slid into a severe recession. Many banks and businesses failed. At times, nearly one in four people in the U.S. workforce were unemployed. Millions of people lost their homes and savings. Hoover did not cause the Depression. The conditions had been in place before he took office. But many Americans blamed Hoover for their suffering. They believed he permitted the economic crisis to continue and even deepen during his time in office. Herbert Hoover was born in a small house in the state of Iowa. His parents were Quakers. Their religion valued simplicity, hard work, equality among people, and peaceful resolution of conflict. Hoover and his brother and sister were influenced by these beliefs, even after their parents died. By the time young Herbert Hoover was 9, he was an orphan. He moved to the state of Oregon in the Pacific Northwest and lived with an uncle. Hoover did not thrive in that situation. Reports say that he usually kept to himself, and he did not do particularly well in school. Yet one official from Stanford University liked what he saw in the young man: hard work and a desire to learn new things. At the time, Stanford University was just getting established. It admitted Hoover into its first class. Hoover had to work hard at Stanford, both in class and to earn money to pay tuition. But the experience brought many benefits. Hoover studied geology and went on to work as a mining engineer. The job led to positions in Australia, China, and other parts of the world. He became an internationally known expert on mining. He also wrote a leading textbook on mining. These experiences, along with good business investments, led to great wealth for Hoover. At Stanford, he also met the woman who would become his wife. Her name was Lou Henry. She was the first woman from Stanford to complete a study program with a degree in geology. The Hoovers went on to have 2 sons. During World War I, the Hoovers' lives changed dramatically. The family was living in London when the war began. U.S. government officials asked Hoover to organize an evacuation effort for American tourists who were in Europe. In only a few weeks, Hoover's committee succeeded. Later, he helped get food and supplies to people in Belgium. As a result, Hoover earned a public image as a smart, skilled humanitarian. When the United States entered World War I, President Woodrow Wilson asked Hoover to lead the government's Food Administration. In that position, Hoover led an effort to change Americans' behavior in order to support the war effort. He asked them to limit the kinds of food they ate and goods they bought. The effort was, for the most part, successful. Americans called their moves to limit their consumption to Hooverize. Hoover went on to organize programs to aid other countries, including Russia. He also helped parts of the U.S. recover after terrible flooding. And as Secretary of Commerce, he pushed businesses, researchers, and government officials to work together. Hoover aimed to reduce boom and bust cycles and keep the U.S. economy healthy. In all his efforts, Hoover urged Americans to choose to participate. He did not believe in using government requirements to force cooperation. Instead, he supported individualism, the idea that Americans must protect the qualities of creativity, equal opportunity, and service to others. Hoover's beliefs were popular with many Americans at the time, and with many Americans today. In the election of 1928, Hoover easily won the presidency. He promised to continue leading the country down the path of prosperity. Thank you. When Hoover took office in 1929, he said, "I have no fears for the future of our country. It is bright with hope." That was in March. In October, the U.S. stock market crashed. Thousands of investors lost their savings. The event was part of a sharp downturn in the economies of the United States and of many other countries. At first, Hoover believed the downturn would pass. But as time went on, the situation grew worse. Businesses could not expand their workforce. Farmers could not afford to harvest their crops. Everyday people had too little money to pay for housing costs and, in some cases, food. And then banks across the country began to fail. President Hoover worked hard to fix the problems. He tried many approaches, creating government agencies, urging private and public groups to cooperate, and working to balance the federal budget. But Hoover did not want to use federal money to provide direct aid to Americans. He worried that such actions would make people dependent on the government and reduce people's individual power and morale. Nor did he want to use the federal government to try to control the economy. Government intervention, he said, would lead to socialism and eventually destroy the country's founding beliefs. Instead, Hoover tried to support states and businesses indirectly and urged people to find ways to help one another. Yet many lawmakers and members of the public rejected Hoover's measures as insufficient and even cruel. Some used his name differently than they had before he took office. Now, they called the dirty shelters where hungry and homeless people lived Hoovervilles, and they called men's empty pockets Hoover flags. Although Hoover tried to persuade Americans that he was protecting their interests in the long run, voters refused to elect him for a second term. Instead, they overwhelmingly chose a president who promised an activist federal government and a hopeful New Deal for Americans. After they left the White House, the Hoovers retired to their home in Palo Alto, California. Lew Henry Hoover died in 1944, but Hoover lived 20 more years, many of them working for the public good. He helped international relief efforts, advised the U.S. government, and led committees to reform the presidency. Hoover also commented on later presidents and their policy decisions. He was especially critical of government programs set up to provide aid and intervention in Americans' lives. Until his death from cancer at the age of 90, Hoover remained committed to his beliefs. He spoke for limiting the power of the federal government and for supporting freedom of opportunity for individuals. But in the eyes of many Americans, Hoover is linked to the failure of the federal government to lessen the Great Depression. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.